Davis Van Opdorp here with Stefan Biankowski and Ross Dunbar, and you're listening to the second episode of the Tribuna Weekly Podcast. We got a decent amount to talk about after the international break, even though it is an international break. Of course, the transfer window came to a close and a lot of interesting deals late in the transfer window, and an interesting Germany game to talk about against Norway. So why don't we start there? Stefan, Germany... They beat Norway, obviously, 3-0. It didn't really seem that difficult for them, but you didn't really think that they looked very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just a bog-standard win. I didn't think they looked bad at all. I think, by and large, Germany tend to be pretty lackadaisical, error-prone, and just anything but the finished article in these qualifying games. But I actually, if so, in that regard, I guess, I thought they looked absolutely fine. I actually thought we would have seen a little more... I thought we would have seen a different kind of formation or lineup from Löw. I thought this might have been a game which we saw someone like Weigl or Brandt start, but it wasn't, and it was very similar. It was almost identical to the same team we've seen so far, especially with players like Mario Götze and Thomas Müller playing, who perhaps against a team like Norway, you know, maybe didn't have to see them as much. But yeah, and at the end of the day, 3 points. Very comfortable win as far as from I can tell. I mean, I must be honest, I had one eye in the Scotland game, had both games in front of me, and it was very hard to watch either of them, actually. I wouldn't recommend it. Yeah, 3 points, job done, and, you know, ruthless and efficient as Germany seemed to be.
Well, I think Götze was another interesting point. He played up top again, and that's because Mario Gomez is injured. He's still injured after being injured during the European Championship. Ross, they still seem to have some striker issues, especially if they're still playing Mario Götze at the top and Thomas Müller is still playing out on the wing. What do you think is the solution for Löw there?
That's difficult to say. I mean, this was a big topic of conversation during the European Championships, and I think we have to kind of accept that Mario Götze is a part of Joachim Löw's plans. I mean, in qualifying, he actually looked okay. I mean, I remember watching the games against Scotland, and he was excellent in both games. Even dealing with the physicality, I thought he was really good. And obviously, this is a kind of new era for Mario Götze, going back to Borussia Dortmund, and by early indications, it looks as if he's working hard and losing a bit of weight, so maybe the future does look bright for him. Striking options, though, are very limited. I mean, Mario Gomez, I think, is a very limited player. You need to build a team around him, and you need guys like Thomas Müller to be in form when you're playing them alongside Mario Gomez. I'm not really too sure what this solution is, to be honest. I would have called up Andrew Hand to the squad maybe in the summer, would have given them another option, someone a little bit more direct. But unfortunately, I think the state of the game is that Germany don't have a great amount of striking options. And interesting that, you know, like you said, Stefan, like in qualifying, Germany are actually very hot and cold, and even though their record would suggest otherwise, and under Jürgen Löw, we've actually seen a lot of instances when Germany have really struggled in qualifying. They've really struggled to break teams down. They've struggled with the physicality of playing teams, you know, like Sweden, like Norway, teams like that, who generally make it difficult for them. So it's quite interesting to see if Jürgen Löw does try to experiment. Generally, he has done in qualifying. And obviously it's all leading towards Russia, but on the striking option front, there's not a great deal there for him to pick from.
Well, it's interesting because their fixture list in this group is really, really not that hard. Because they play in the next window, the next international break, they play Northern Ireland, and then they play the Czech Republic. So, Stefan, those are their next two toughest opponents, and then they play Azerbaijan and San Marino. So what are we supposed to take out of these games if they're not even playing like someone, even like Poland or like Scotland or Ireland, like the same group that they had in the European qualifiers?
Yeah, I think they've definitely lucked out in terms of their opposition in this qualifying round. I mean, Northern Ireland obviously caused them some trouble in the Euros in terms of, you know, being quite stubborn in defence. I wouldn't suggest that's going to change when they come up against them, and maybe the Czech Republic might go through something of a return to form since they haven't really been at the best of their game recently. But by and large, you look at that qualification campaign, and I imagine Löw probably struggles to find much enthusiasm, if I'm honest with you. One interesting thing before I move off Götze entirely, it's just kind of popped in my head there, is that I do wonder how Lowe will continue to approach Götze if he does move into this Dortmund side and become, you know, a really established number 10 or winger, because, you know, when Götze was at Bayern, Lowe could really do what he wanted with him because Pep didn't really care. You know, he could play him up front, he could play him in goals. Pep's not going to care either way. I wonder if Thomas Tuchel might take issue, or not take issue, but just be a little baffled if he's trying to play Götze as a number 10 every week, and then every time he goes off to play for Germany, Lowe has him playing as some sort of false striker. I know they're not the most opposing positions, but I just wonder if Götze are getting more game time and becoming far more specialised in his skills at Dortmund under Tuchel, if that was the case, whether he can continue to play this kind of aloof forward role for Germany. But yeah, but by and large, I think I can understand why Götze plays for Germany in that kind of role.
It's interesting because to me in that game, he really was just a guy that was helping Norway set up their offside trap. I mean, he's basically standing, trying to make the runs in behind, and he would occasionally combine on the wing. But the question still remains, Ross. I mean, Thomas Müller and Götze, those are two players that are supposed to play off of a striker. Can they play at the same time?
I think they could play. I think they could definitely play at the same time. I just don't know if it's the most effective solution. I mean, I've stated my thoughts on Thomas Müller many a time, and so far, I mean, it's very early to judge, but I think he does look as if he's getting that mojo back again in front of goal. Timing his runs a little bit better, getting the break of the ball when he needs to, and it's finishing with, you know, great precision. But, yeah, I mean, personally speaking, if it's my choice, I wouldn't play the two of them together. I don't think they rub off well on each other. Götze makes a lot of similar runs to Müller. And I don't know, I mean, I just think Germany at the European Championship showed that they need, first of all, they need probably to upgrade on Mario Gomez. They need a Robert Lewandowski type striker or someone of that ilk. And I think they need a one-on-one player like a Sané or even Julian Brandt, for example, who we saw in the international squad. That's the kind of guy who I think could add something to the team. But I don't know if Götze and Müller is the right solution, and whether Jogi Löw is kind of hamstrung by the fact that these guys have an enormous reputation, and he almost feels as if he has to try and put these guys into the team. I mean, you look at what Sam Allardyce was saying about Wayne Rooney earlier in the week about, you know, basically he has to play because he's the most talented player that they have available. Well, maybe it's a kind of similar situation with Götze and Müller. These guys are so big in Germany that you almost feel obliged to pick them.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Brandt, because when he came on, he looked pretty electric, and that wasn't, I mean, it's not surprising to us because we've been raving about him all preseason. We obviously noticed how much weight he's gained up top and how much tougher he looks. I wonder, Stefan, is he the better option now than someone like Götze, having Müller, Draxler, and Brandt in the same attack?
Yeah, well, I mean, Ross and I went to one of Leverkusen's preseason friendlies against Porto, I think it was, and didn't even recognise the guy on the side of the pitch because he's almost doubled in size. Like, I think he's actually taken a growth spurt as well, which wouldn't be that peculiar.
He's still
for
only 20, keep
exactly,
in mind. He's
yeah,
still only
exactly.
20.
Plenty of kids do sprout at that age. But yeah, I thought Brandt's one of this group of players coming through now who I really expect to see move into the first team. Come Russia, he's won, Max Meyer's won, Weigl's won, and so's Kimmich, and perhaps even Sané. I wouldn't be surprised if Sané pushed his way in there, but he'd obviously have to develop quite quickly at Man City for that to be the case, because the other ones are playing week in, week out, and maybe even Serge Gnabry, if you don't know what's going to happen in 2 years. But all these kids are coming through, they look strong, they look hungry. And you look at Mario Gomez, Götze, and he's surely going to have to move out of the way if this continues, because you've got Julian Draxler, who's on the left wing right now. He might want to move inside at some point to number 10 role. Max Meyer plays number 10. Max Meyer seems to be the man for Schalke this season, in terms of reputation, in terms of importance, and especially for the German setup. The guy can't get a break right now, from what the German FA are demanding of him in terms of appearances for a number of squads. So it's not just a case of Mario Götze sitting there saying, I need to get back on track with Dortmund, and then that means I'll look fitter, I'll lose a little bit of weight, and maybe I'll be able to put in more better performances in this fake striker role for Germany. He's also going to have to look over his shoulder, because as tends to be the case with Germany, they've got a whole stock of young players just waiting to replace these guys. So it's going to be very exciting, and that's kind of what I was hoping for last night. I was hoping we'd see these boys play. They came on in the end, but I really expect to see two or three of these guys really establish themselves in the team before Russia.
Well, it's interesting because Oliver Bierhoff was really stressing in his press conference before the game on Sunday that he made it clear to the press that was there that this is a new cycle, and what they do in new cycles is they try to develop new talent. But I'm wondering, Ross, if they have a little bit of leeway now because Meyer can play for the U21, so it can Kimmich, and there's a U21 tournament coming up this summer. Is this where we're going to see these guys develop, or do you think that they should develop still with the first team?
Personally, I think they should develop with the first team. I mean, that's a really good question, actually. I mean, it's the kind of dilemma that you see a lot of big national teams having as to whether these guys should get that tournament experience or whether these guys should be involved maybe in more kind of rudimentary qualifiers that Germany are expected to win. I mean, I think when you win a tournament like the World Cup and you are world champions, I think you almost have to adapt right away. I think Germany, and that was kind of at the end of the Germany cycle, you know, they had 2010, 2012, and 2014 was kind of the end of a lot of these guys' international career. And I think for the European Championships, they should have tried to evolve a little bit, maybe bringing in guys like Julian Weigl to be a big part of this team. Julian Brandt and Max Meyer, I'm still not sure about from that point of view, but looking ahead to 2018, I'm really interested to see how this team evolves, because you rhymed off all those names there, and now I'm beginning to actually question whether Mario Götze, if he doesn't deliver at Borussia Dortmund, where he even gets a look at, because, you know, Stefan mentioned there, Julian Brandt looks physically so much more developed than he was last year, but I think these guys make the game look so easy. And a guy like Julian Brandt, for example, you know, with a Champions League experience this year and potentially putting together a really solid season in the Bundesliga, in a year's time, he could be a regular feature in this Germany team. You mentioned Julian Draxler. I'd be really interested to see Julian Draxler play actually as a central striker, perhaps, or as the more advanced forward, because I think he does what Mario Götze can do. He's got the control, he's got the movement, but he also has that kind of strength and presence, and he uses his body really well in those situations. So, really interesting to see how this team evolves. Meyer, Volland, Brandt, Draxler, there's so many options for Germany going into 2018.
Before we finish, I know we'll move on now, but it's worth pointing out that there's a really good chance that Brandt could play more games, score more goals, and create far more assists for Leverkusen this season than Mario Götze might do for Dortmund. It's absolutely a possibility, and could do the exact same next season. So there's no reason why, going into this World Cup in Russia, why Brandt isn't by far the more established Bundesliga player than Götze.
Alright, well, that's the Germany game. Of course, they won 3-0, so there's not really much to talk about. I mean, the only other thing we could talk about is probably the Schweinsteiger issue, but I think Michael Cox on Twitter addressed that issue pretty well, of whether he should have played or not. And of course, Germany won, so his argument kind of went out the window. But let's move now to the transfer window. Of course, there was a lot of interesting deals that happened. We, before the show and during the pre-production meeting, we listed out a ton of transfers that happened that looked very interesting to a lot of different Bundesliga teams. But let's start with Serge Gnabry, because that, I think, is the one that made the most ripples, whether Bayern Munich are involved or not. Ross, what do you think of that move? Why do you think he chose a team like Bremen over maybe another side that could, because Schalke was also one of those teams that was interested as well?
Probably because he has the opportunity of first-team football at a big club. And he said, you know, there's a lot of attacking potential in this team, and I would kind of agree. You know, he's got Mats Kruse there, you've got Aaron Johansson. I know they didn't show it against Bayern, but this team does have the potential to be a good side. And after the performances of the Olympic Games, I think Gnabry showed that he's got a lot to offer. This is something that he really needs in his career, having spent, you know, years on the bench at Arsenal as a youth player and failed loan spell at West Brom. So it's a good investment for Werder Bremen, another really smart signing, and I'm really interested to see how that pans out.
What do you think is going to be his role in this team, Stefan? Because, I mean, he's talked about his dad has talked about playing a number 10 role. Of course, he played on the wing for the German national team at the Olympics. Where do you see him fitting into that team?
I think he's going to be primarily a winger. As Ross alluded to, they've already got a number of strikers. I mean, I think a fully fit Werder Bremen team this season probably plays with two strikers up front, with Gnabry either side of them. But I'm really excited to see how he does. I think he's undoubtedly, first and foremost, a winger. I think it seems these days every winger wants to be a number 10. I think he should walk before he tries to run. The guy, I mean, he had a good Olympics for Germany, but he still has to prove himself over Werder Bremen. I mean, to make a light-hearted joke about why he went to Werder Bremen, I think he probably went because Bayern told him to. If I can make that point, even though Bremen deny it, there's certainly something fishy going on there. But I think it's a great buy for Werder Bremen, who actually had a decent transfer window all in all. It's just a shame that Max Kruse got injured, and their first game was against bloody Bayern Munich. So if he can walk, if he can come into this team, he can really help. I think it'd be really exciting to see, because it's a good German talent back in the league. Not back in the league, I don't think. Did he ever play in the league? He played for Stuttgart under-19s, yep. Didn't he? So I don't think he's ever played in the Bundesliga, but it's good to have a German talent in the league where, as we know, is a place where these guys can grow. So let's hope he goes from strength to strength.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because it seems that a lot of German talent are choosing to stay in the Bundesliga. Do you think that that's the right choice, or do you think that Germans basically need to test themselves abroad more than maybe some of them do now?
Hard to say. I mean, a lot of these guys have gone to England. Look at Karius, for example, who went to Man City at such a young age, come back to
Liverpool, actually
first team regular,
yeah,
and now he's established goalkeeper in the Premier League. Every player adapts to different circumstances. I don't think there's one golden rule here. With Gnabry, I think his experience at Arsenal will help him, because he's worked under Arsene Wenger, he's worked at a top club. Now coming to Werder Bremen, there's a level of expectation that he has to deliver. So I think, I don't think there's one rule that fits all here.
I think ultimately the Bundesliga is probably one of, if not the best league in the world for actually curating these talented players. I mean, I don't know if there's any specific rule for it, because it's not as if the clubs are all skint and they can't buy players. A lot of the, as we've seen in this transfer window, most of the teams do have money which they can spend, but fortunately there still is that culture of being able to give players chances to play in the first team. And luckily, it would seem, if like the likes of Oliver Burke come to Leipzig, it seems that he might not have watched many Bundesliga games in England, but it's at least in terms of whether it's his agent or the club themselves, Leipzig, it's probably becoming easier and easier to convince these young players that the Bundesliga is a good place to ply your trade, because arguably they now see that any half decent Bundesliga player ends up moving to Tottenham for 20 or 30 million euros. So it's a very simple formula, and it works. We see it every season. The clubs spend time with these players, and they make a fortune off them when they're with the Premier League, and a lot of the German clubs are more than happy to do that. They're laughing their way to the bank when Spurs or Stoke come calling. So long may it continue.
Well, it's interesting that one of the teams that Gnabry turned down was actually Schalke, and you mentioned Tottenham. They bought two players that used to be teammates at Tottenham in Nabil Bentaleb and Benjamin Stambouli. Stambouli, of course, came from Paris Saint-Germain, and they also added Konoplyanka from Europa League masters Sevilla. Now, Ross, we talked a lot about last week about all the changes that they made and how they kind of need to settle, and then they just go out and make three more, basically, before the window closes. So does this make the task a lot more tougher for Weinziel, or is he adding the players that he is that he basically needs to help turn the ship around?
Yeah, I think he's adding the players that he needs to the squad. I mean, I mentioned last week that Stambouli is the kind of physical guy that you needed in front of the back four, and given the performance last week, they certainly need to make changes very quickly. Interesting to see where Bentaleb fits in. They played Denis Iogo in one of those positions, which kind of says it all regarding the result last week. So Bentaleb might add that extra bit of quality. Konoplyanka is a very interesting one, though, because he is a very, very good player, very capable player, and he looks as if he's a player who could really propel the Schalke team towards the top half. He did so well at Sevilla. He does so well in the Ukrainian national team. I even saw a lot of Dortmund fans complimenting Schalke for the business that they did, signing a bully called Konoplyanka. Okay, it's initially a loan deal, but if they make the deal permanently, then they could have some really good business there.
Who's the winger that Schalke got on loan last season from January?
It was the guy. He's
so in Ukraine. He came from.
He came from Dynamo Kiev. His name was Yunus Belhanda.
Yeah, Belhanda came into that team last season as a winger who was willing to have a go at it, and he actually made a big difference initially. So it's interesting to see if Conor Palyanka, I've been struggling to pronounce his name since he joined, but he can make a similar difference in terms of, you know, the winger come in and make an impression. Because I mean, I'm not sure if I'm as optimistic as Ross in terms of the transfer signs. I look at the list of players who signed and I do wonder whether it's just kind of scattergun, especially since a lot of them were made late in the window. I do kind of get the impression that Christian Heidel may have spent most of the summer just running around seeing who he could sign rather than who he should sign, which would certainly make sense as to why he fell asleep in the first league game of the season. He just hasn't had any sleep recently. So I remain to be convinced, but yeah. It's Schalke flexing their muscles in the transfer window, and let's see if Weinziel can match it on the pitch.
All right, so maybe Christian Heidel didn't do the best job because he was half asleep, according to Stefan. But Stefan, what do you think what was the deadline day signing that you were impressed? Because there was a lot of interesting ones outside of the ones we already mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one that really took everyone's attention was Gnabry, because of just the sheer nonsense of that deal, like from start to finish. But the one I was actually really impressed with was Romalo moving to Mainz. I actually thought he was quite a good player for Leverkusen, and I really have no idea in what situation Leverkusen are comfortable sending a decent player on loan to Mainz. Mainz aren't, you know, Freiburg. They're not Werder Bremen. They're not a team that's going to be fighting off relegation this season. They're a team who could quite easily be challenging with Leverkusen for a spot in the top four or in a Europa League spot if things don't go so well for Leverkusen. I really think Romalo is a good player. So I think Mainz's gain might well be Leverkusen's downfall. Not his downfall, but, you know, a negative aspect for him. I know they managed to get Dragovic in, so they've got Roger Schmidt's probably more than happy with the central defenders he's got. But at the end of the day, you know, this is a competition, and the Bundesliga, it's a tournament. You don't give a team that are right beside you in the league a really solid player, but you never know with these things, what goes on behind closed doors. He might have been furious at not getting first team football, and getting a guy like that out there, if he's not happy and he's sitting in a corner brooding away in the dressing room, then maybe just getting him out anywhere is better than nothing. But I was really surprised to see him not only leave, because I thought he did quite well that season when he was called upon as central midfield and central defence, but to go to a team like Mainz who could cause a lot of trouble for Leverkusen this season.
Well, it's interesting because there was an interview that he gave with Kicker, and he basically explained why he moved. He had full, as most players have, he had full anticipation that he was going to be a part of Leverkusen, and then when that didn't work out, he ended up going out on loan. So I think it's interesting that also that he thinks of himself as a number six, and maybe Leverkusen have a lot of holding midfielders already in the mix, and that's why they moved on from someone like Christoph Kramer. So that I think was the one that stuck out to me too. What about you, Russ? What was the one that stuck out to you on deadline day?
The one for me was Filip Vorsheid to Wolfsburg. You know, I know that Stefan, you've spoken very highly of the work that Klaus Allos has done this summer and the signings that they've made. They're not getting a lot of praise for it, but I think Vorsheid was a really, really smart move because he had a great time at Nuremberg with Peter Hecking. I mean, he went to Leverkusen and became a German international, and I remember at the time people were saying that this was the guy who was the solution to Germany's centre-back problems. I mean, it's only 2 or 3 years down the line, so he clearly hasn't lost anything. And if he can settle under Hecking again, you know, be part of a solid defence with Bruma and Knoche, I think that's a really smart move for Wolfsburg, and they might actually be a more solid team than we've come to expect in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one player that I think deserves maybe a minor point, I wouldn't go so far as saying he's one of the standout ones, but I think one that really, I know Davis's face is going to trip when I say this, but I genuinely think Kyriakos Papadopoulos to Leipzig.
Oh my God, no, I'm just kidding, go ahead.
I think he could be a really shrewd signing for the club because they don't have any defenders. I mean, that first game we watched, I'm quite impressed that they signed Oliver Burke. I think he's going to be a really good player just in general, and it's good to see obviously British players coming to Germany, but I spent that whole transfer window, I think everyone was thinking, you need defenders, you need defenders, you need defenders. luckily, you know, in the 11th hour, they pick up Papadopoulos. He's no world beater, and quite rightfully, he's nowhere near the Leverkusen team, but there's no reason why he can't play week in, week out for that Leipzig team and really offer something in that central defensive role that they didn't have.
Well, it's interesting because one of my theories about Papadopoulos and why he went to Leipzig is that Martin Hinteregger said no from moving to Salzburg to Leipzig like many players.
You're getting a conspiracy theory out again.
Well, it's because Hinteregger came out and had it, he gave basically a bunch of quotes saying that, bringing to light the situation at Salzburg and how it's kind of that club, even though they're consistently one of the best in Austria, they're a complete mess because their best players are always shipped off to Leipzig. I mean, they got Naby Keita. Of course, I mentioned Bernardo last week. And now Hinteregger saying no and deciding to go to Augsburg instead. And he said it out of respect for Salzburg. He did not want to go to Leipzig. What do you think on that, Ross?
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I mean, I can understand his point. We talked about it last week, and we kind of almost descended into a complete anarchy there with the rant about the European Super League. And yeah, I know I don't like the model. I don't really know if there's anything to add on it. I just think it makes a mockery of the modern game. And yeah, I mean, fair play to him for making the decision. It's a good signing, and also with Augsburg they signed Jonathan Schmidt from Hoffenheim. Mm-hmm. He's a really good player. Could really add something in their attack, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an interesting signing to me as well. So we're about to come up on this next match day. We're finally back with Bundesliga. We're going to actually get into the full swing of Bundesliga fixtures now that we have this randomly placed international break out of the way. So what we're basically going to do, rather than previewing all of them, we're going to just pick out what we are looking for this week. So, Ross, I'll start with you. What are you looking for this week?
Hard to look past Schalke Bayern, to be honest, on Friday evening. I mean, we spoke a lot about Schalke last week on the podcast about, you know, the amount of changes that they made over the summer and maybe the instability in their performance against Frankfurt. I mean, this is a huge baptism of fire for Marcus Weinziel. He has to get this team going over the international break. Obviously, there was 11 players who were on international duty, so he didn't have a full complement to train with. But now they have to get down to business, and I'm really interested to see how Max Meyer especially performs against Bayern Munich, because he was excellent at the Olympic Games. He's getting a lot of, you know, press coverage right now. He was also with the German national team and scored a goal against Finland. Now he has a big opportunity to deliver against Bayern Munich, a game that he actually performed really well in last year.
Yeah, I was going to say that. He scored in that game last year, right?
One of Schalke's best performers, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, this is a big opportunity for him to show that he's worth the hype.
All right, Stefan, what about you?
I'll probably go for Leverkusen versus Hamburg. A few aspects of this game that interest me. The most obvious one to me is that just the nature in which Leverkusen lost to Gladbach last week. It was a really fun game, and it was a game that I was kind of hoping to see Leverkusen actually step up and actually maybe beat Gladbach. I mean, not that I'm really supporting one club or another, but I just thought it'd be interesting to see if they could take that step to really show that they really mean business this season. I know it's not fair to judge a team on one performance, especially against a team in Gladbach who they're already well and truly on their way this season, since they're in the Europa League Champions League qualifiers a few weeks beforehand. But I think at home against Hamburg is a game that they really should feel much more comfortable with. But they play against a Hamburg team that's spent a lot of money this season. I can't remember the name of the fella who has been bankrolling Hamburg recently. Ross, you probably know his name, do you?
Yeah, Klaus-Michael Kühner, yeah.
Yeah, he's put a lot of money into the club this season. He's not an individual who gets as much stick as other benefactors in the Bundesliga. I know it's not a league that's famous for them, but one way or another, people who want to put money into the Bundesliga clubs, they do it, and he's one of them. He doesn't have any stake in the club, he just gives them money, from what I can tell. But either way, they spent a lot of money, and I don't think anyone at the club at board level is going to be anywhere near happy if they aren't finishing in the top half this season. So Hamburg, I've got a decent squad, I think it'll be really interesting to see. I think it's going to be a really good game. Two teams that probably have a lot of pressure on them already in the second game of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think one of the things that we mentioned also before the show started, which was Douglas Santos, who came in from Atlético Mineiro from the Brazilian First League, I think that's also another. There was big, another big money signing for them. I think it was their third or their. I think it was their third signing that was over 10 million euros. And that was also, they broke their transfer record with Filip Kostić. So they Ingolstadt held them last week. So that's definitely a good game. I'm actually going to focus on Bremen again, because I think Viktor Skripnik has been a very hot topic right now. He might be, he's probably the odds-on favorite to be sacked first, which would just make Bremen into more of a dumpster fire than it is at the moment, because it apparently, if reports are read to be believed, that Thomas Eichen left the club because he wanted to fire Skripnik and the board didn't want to. So if the board goes out and basically fires Skripnik after that, then it just completely undermines the whole front office decisions recently. But I think they've had 2 weeks now to soak in that Bayern Munich game. They're playing Augsburg. Alfred Finnbogason is not Robert Lewandowski. So Lamine Sané can say that Alfred Finnbogason has two arms and two legs, so he should be able to contain him, and that argument would actually be kind of legitimate. But if Bremen doesn't perform well in this game, then there's going to be a lot of questions really early on Skripnik's plate. And if he doesn't answer them as quickly as he can, then he's going to basically be sacked first. So, yeah.
I think another one that we really should point out as well is Dortmund obviously going away to Leipzig. This is a game in which the Dortmund ultras have said they're going to boycott.
Which a lot of ultras have said also, yeah. Too. So they're going to be one of the first.
It's going to be interesting to see if fans end up just going anyway and filling up the allocation. There's never a shortage of demand for Dortmund games. But yeah, and just in general, I think it's going to be quite interesting. I'll be watching it, obviously, because hopefully we get to see Oliver Burke in action. Ross and I probably both watched the Scotland game last night. He looked decent there. So it's really exciting to see how he does. But I'm actually really excited as well for Wolfsburg versus Cologne. I thought Cologne looked really solid in the first week match day. And as we've said now on two of these podcasts, yeah, I'm really interested to see what Wolfsburg do. They look decent in the first match day as well. And if they can get a good 3 points at home against Cologne, then you know they might start building up some pressure where teams like Leverkusen and Mainz are still trying to find their feet.
All right, anything else to add, Ross?
No, all good for me.
All right, so that'll wrap up the second episode. So thank you guys for listening again. You can follow Stefan Biankowski at SBiankowski and Ross Dumber at RossDumber93. And you can follow me at Davis_VinUpdorp. I've got some stick for not giving my Twitter handle, but I don't really tweet a lot, so you won't really clog up your timeline that much, so it doesn't really matter. But anyways, thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you guys next week.